said. "I was telling Penelope that it is really too bad she's retired, since your engagement would have been quite the most newsworthy piece of gossip we've had all year."
"Interesting how that works out," Colin murmured.
Eloise agreed. "And she surely would have devoted an entire column just to your engagement ball tomorrow night."
Penelope did not lower her teacup from her mouth.
"Do you want some more?" Eloise asked her.
Penelope nodded and handed her the cup, although she very much missed having it in front of her face as a shield. She knew that Eloise had blurted out Lady Whistledown's name because she did not want Colin to know that she had mixed feelings about his marriage. But still, Penelope fervently wished that Eloise had said anything else in reply to Colin's question.
"Why don't you ring for more food?" Eloise asked Colin.
"Already did so," he answered. "Wickham intercepted me in the hall and asked if I was hungry." He popped the last bite of Eloise's biscuit into his mouth. "Wise man, that Wickham."
"Where did you go today, Colin?" Penelope asked,
eager to get the topic firmly off of Lady Whistledown. He gave his head a beleaguered shake. "Devil if I know. Mother dragged me from shop to shop."
"Aren't you 33 years old?" Eloise inquired sweetly.
He answered her with a scowl.
"Just thought you'd be beyond the age of having Mother drag you about, that's all," she murmured.
"Mother will be dragging all of us about when we're doddering old fools, and you know it," he replied. "Besides, she's so delighted to see me married, I really can't bring myself to spoil her fun." Penelope sighed. This had to be why she loved the man. Anyone who treated his mother so well would surely be an excellent husband. "And how are your wedding preparations coming along?" Colin asked Penelope. She hadn't meant to pull a face, but she did anyway.
"I have never been so exhausted in all my life," she admitted.
He reached over and grabbed a large crumb off of her plate. "We should elope."
"Oh, could we really?"
Penelope asked, the words flying from her lips in an unsummoned rush. He blinked. "Actually, I was joking, mostly, although it does seem a prime idea."
"I shall arrange for a ladder,"
Eloise said, clapping her hands together,
"so that you might climb to her room and steal her away." "There's a tree," Penelope said. "Colin will have no difficulty with it."
"Good God," he said. "You're not serious, are you?"
"No," she sighed. "But I could be. If you were."
"I can't be. Do you know what it would do to my mother?" He rolled his eyes. "Not to mention yours." Penelope groaned.
"I know."
"She'd hunt me down and kill me," Colin said.
"Mine or yours?"
"Both. They'd join forces." He craned his neck toward the door. "Where is the food?"
"You just got here, Colin," Eloise said. "Give them time."
"And here I thought Wickham a sorcerer," he grumbled, "able to conjure food with a snap of his hand." "Here you are, sir," came Wickham's voice as he sailed into the room with a large tray. "See," Colin said, raising his brows first at Eloise and then at Penelope. "I told you so."
"Why," Penelope asked, "do I sense that I will be hearing those words from your lips far too many times in my future?"
"Most likely because you will," Colin replied. "You'll soon learn," he shot her an extremely cheeky grin, "that I am almost always right."
"Oh, please," Eloise groaned. "I may have to side with Eloise on this one," Penelope said.
"Against your husband?" He placed a hand on his heart, while the other one reached for a sandwich. "I'm wounded."
"You're not my husband yet."
Colin turned to Eloise. "The kitten has claws." Eloise raised her brows.
"You didn't realise that before you proposed?"
"Of course I did," he said, taking a bite of his sandwich. "I just didn't think she'd use them on me." And then he looked at her with such a hot, masterful expression that Penelope's bones went straight to water.
"Well," Eloise announced, rising quite suddenly to her feet. "I think I shall allow you two soon-to-be newlyweds a moment or two of privacy."
"How positively forward-thinking of you," Colin murmured. Eloise looked to him with a peevish twist to her mouth.
"Anything for you, dear brother. Or rather," she added, her expression growing arch, "anything for Penelope."
Colin stood and turned to his betrothed. "I seem to be slipping down the pecking order." Penelope just smiled behind her teacup and said,
"I am making it my policy never to get in the middle of a Bridgerton spat."
"Oh-ho!" Eloise chortled.
"You'll not be able to keep to that one, I'm afraid, Mrs. Soon-to-be Bridgerton. Besides," she added with a wicked grin, "if you think this is a spat, I can't wait until you see us in full form."
"You mean I haven't?" Penelope asked.
Both Eloise and Colin shook their heads in a way that made her extremely fearful. Oh, dear.
"Is there something I should know?" Penelope asked.
Colin grinned rather wolfishly. "It's too late now." Penelope gave Eloise a helpless glance, but all she did was laugh as she left the room, closing the door firmly behind her. "Now that was nice of Eloise," Colin murmured.
"What?"
Penelope asked innocently. His eyes gleamed. "The door."
"The door? Oh!"
she yelped.
"The door!"
Colin smiled, moving over to the sofa beside her. There was something rather delightful about Penelope on a rainy afternoon. He'd hardly seen her since they'd become engaged. Wedding plans had a way of doing that to a couple, and yet she'd not been out of his thoughts, even as he slept. Funny how that happened. He'd spent years not really ever thinking about her, unless she was standing in front of his face, and now she had permeated his every last thought, his every last desire. How had this happened? When had it happened? And did it really matter? Maybe the only important thing was that he wanted her, and she was, or at least she would be, his. Once he put his ring on her finger, the hows, whys, and whens would become irrelevant, provided that this madness, he felt, never went away. He touched his finger to her chin, tipping her face up to the light. Her eyes shone with anticipation, and her lips... Dear God, how was it possible that the men of London had never noticed how perfect they were? He smiled. This was a permanent madness, and he couldn't have been more pleased. Colin had never been opposed to marriage. He'd simply been opposed to a dull marriage. He wasn't picky. He just wanted passion and friendship and intellectual conversation and a good laugh every now and then. A wife from whom he wouldn't want to stray. Amazingly, he seemed to have found that in Penelope. All he needed to do now was make sure her big secret remained just that, a secret. Because he didn't think he could bear the pain he'd see in her eyes if she were cast out of society. "Colin," she whispered, her breath quivering across her lips, making him really want to kiss her. He leaned in. "Hmm?"
"You were so quiet."
"Just thinking."
"About what?"
He gave her an indulgent smile. "You really have been spending too much time with my sister."
"What does that mean?"
she asked, her lips twitching in such a way that he knew she'd never feel any compunction at poking fun at him. She would keep him on his toes, this woman. "You seem," he said, "to have developed a certain penchant for persistence."
"Tenacity?"
"That too."
"But that's a good thing."
Their lips were still mere inches apart, but the urge to continue the teasing conversation was too strong. "When you're persistently avowing your obedience for your husband," he murmured, "that's a good thing."
"Oh, really?"
His chin dipped into the barest hint of a nod. "And when you're tenaciously holding onto my shoulders when I'm kissing you, that's a good thing as well." Her dark eyes widened so delightfully that he had to add, "Don't you think?" And then she surprised him.
"Like this?" she asked, placing her hands on his shoulders. Her tone was daring, her eyes pure flirtation. Lord, he loved that she surprised him.
"That's a start," he said. "You might have to..."
He moved one of his hands to cover hers, pressing her fingers into his skin.
"Hold me a little more tenaciously."
"I see," she murmured. "So what you're saying is that I should never let go?"
He thought about that for a moment. "Yes," he answered, realizing that there was a deeper meaning in her words, whether she'd intended it or not. "That's exactly what I'm saying." And then words were simply not enough. He brought his lips to hers, remaining gentle for barely a second before his hunger overtook him. He kissed her with a passion he hadn't even known he possessed. It wasn't about desire, or at least it wasn't just about desire. It was about need. It was about a strange sensation, hot and fierce inside of him, urging him to lay claim to her, to somehow brand her as his. He wanted her desperately, and he had absolutely no idea how he could possibly make it through an entire month before the wedding.
"Colin,"
Penelope gasped, just as he was easing her down onto her back on the sofa. He was kissing her jaw, and then her neck, and his lips were far too busy for anything other than a low,
"We're... oh!"
He smiled, even as he nipped her earlobe gently with his teeth. If she could finish a sentence, then he clearly wasn't befuddling her as much as he ought.
"You were saying?" he murmured,
then kissed her deeply on the mouth, just to torture her. He lifted his lips off hers, just long enough for her to say,
"I just..."
And then he kissed her again, reeling with pleasure when she groaned with desire.
"I'm sorry," he said, scooting his hands under the hem of her dress, and then using them to do all sorts of wicked things to her calves. "You were saying?"
"I was,"
she asked, her eyes glazed. He moved his hands higher, until they were tickling the back of her knee.
"You were saying something," he said, pressing his hips against her, because he honestly thought he would burst into flame at that very moment if he did not. "I think," he whispered, sliding his hand over the soft skin of her thigh, "that you were going to say that you wanted me to touch you here."
She gasped, then groaned, then somehow managed to say,
"I don't think that was what I was going to say."
He grinned against her neck.
"Are you sure?"
She nodded.
"So then you want me to stop?"
She shook her head, frantically. He could take her now, he realized. He could make love to her right there on his mother's sofa, and not only would she let him, she would enjoy herself in every way a woman should. It wouldn't be a conquest. It wouldn't even be seduction. It would be more than that. Maybe even love. Colin froze.
"Colin,"
she whispered, opening her eyes.
"Love?"
It wasn't possible.
"Colin?"
Or maybe it was.
"Is something wrong?"
It wasn't that he feared love, or didn't believe in it. He just hadn't expected it. He'd always thought love would hit a man like a thunderbolt, that one day you'd be loitering about at some party, bored to tears, and then you'd see a woman, and you'd know instantly that your life would be changed forever. That was what had happened to his brother Benedict. And heaven knew that he and his wife Sophie were blissfully happy rusticating away in the country. But this thing with Penelope, it had crept up on him. The change had been slow, almost lethargic. And if it was love, well, if it was love, wouldn't he know? He watched her closely, curiously,
thinking that maybe he'd find his answer in her eyes, or the sweep of her hair, or the way the bodice of her gown hung slightly crookedly. Maybe if he watched her long enough, he'd know.
"Colin,"
she whispered, starting to sound slightly anxious. He kissed her again, this time with a fierce determination. If this was love, wouldn't it become obvious when they kissed? But if his mind and body were working separately, then the kiss was clearly in league with his body. Because while his mind's confusion remained just as blurry as ever, his body's need was brought into sharper focus. Hell, now he was in pain, and he really couldn't do anything about it here in his mother's drawing room, even if Penelope would have been a willing participant. He pulled back, letting his hand slip down her leg toward the edge of her skirt. "We can't do this here."
"I know," she said, sounding so sad that his hand stilled on her knee, and he almost lost his resolve to do the right thing and mind the dictates of propriety. He thought hard and fast. It was possible that he could make love to her, and no one would walk in on them. Heaven knew that in his current state, it would be an embarrassingly fast endeavour anyway.
"When is the wedding?" he growled.
"A month."
"What would it take to change that to a fortnight?"
She thought about that for a moment. "Bribery or blackmail? Maybe both. Our mothers will not be easily swayed."
He groaned, letting his hips sink against hers for one delicious moment before heaving himself off. He couldn't take her now. She was going to be his wife. There would be plenty of time for midday tumbles on illicit sofas, but he owed it to her to use a bed, for the first time at least.
"Colin,"
she asked, straightening her dress and smoothing her hair, even though there was no way she was going to make the latter look anything even approaching presentable without a mirror, hairbrush, and maybe even a maid.
"Is something wrong?"
"I want you," he whispered. She looked up at him, startled. "I just wanted you to know that," he said. "I didn't want you to think I stopped because you didn't please me."
"Oh."
She looked as if she wanted to say something. She looked almost absurdly happy at his words.
"Thank you for saying that."
He took her hand and squeezed.
"Do I look a mess?"
she asked. He nodded. "But you're my mess," he whispered. And he was very glad for that. Chapter 16. As Colin liked to walk, and in fact frequently did so to clear his mind, it was no surprise that he spent much of the next day traversing Bloomsbury, and Fitzrovia, and Marylebone, and in fact several other London neighbourhoods, until he looked up and realised that he was standing in the heart of Mayfair, in Grosvenor Square to be precise, outside of Hastings House, town home of the Dukes of Hastings, the latest of whom happened to be married to his sister Daphne. It had been a while since they'd had a conversation, anything above the usual family chit-chat, that was. Of all his siblings, Daphne was the closest in age to him, and they'd always shared a rather special bond, even though they didn't see each other as much as they used to, what with Colin's frequent travels and Daphne's busy family life. Hastings House was one of those enormous mansions that one could find scattered throughout Mayfair and St. James's. Large and square, and constructed of elegant Portland stone, it was thoroughly imposing in its ducal splendour, which made it all the more amusing, Colin thought with a wry grin, that his sister was the current Duchess. He couldn't imagine anyone less haughty or imposing. In fact, Daphne had had difficulty finding a husband when she'd been out on the marriage mart, precisely because she was so friendly and easy to be with. Gentlemen had tended to think of her as their friend, and not as a prospective bride. But all that had changed when she'd met Simon Bassett, Duke of Hastings, and now she was a respectable society matron with four children, aged 10, 9, 8, and 7. It still sometimes seemed odd to Colin that his sister was a mother of all things, while he still lived the free and unfettered life of a bachelor. With only 1 year between them, he and Daphne had always passed through the various stages of life together. Even when she'd married, things hadn't seemed so very different. She and Simon attended the same parties he did, and had many of the same interests and pursuits. But then she'd started reproducing, and while Colin was always delighted to welcome a new niece or nephew into his life, each arrival had brought home the fact that Daphne had moved on in a way he had not. But, he thought, smiling, as Penelope's face drifted through his mind, he supposed all that would soon change. Children. It was a rather nice thought, actually. He hadn't consciously meant to visit Daphne, but now that he was here, he figured he might as well stop by and say hello. So he marched up the steps and gave the big brass knocker a sturdy clanking. Jeffreys, the butler, opened the door almost immediately.
"Mr. Bridgerton," he said, "your sister was not expecting you."
"No, I decided to surprise her. Is she at home?"
"I shall see," the butler said with a nod,
even though they both knew that Daphne would never refuse to see a member of her family. Colin waited in the drawing room while Jeffreys informed Daphne of his presence. Wandering idly about, feeling too restless to sit or even stand in one place. After a few minutes, Daphne appeared in the doorway, looking slightly dishevelled, but happy as always. And why shouldn't she be? Colin wondered. All she'd ever wanted in life was to be a wife and mother, and it seemed that reality had more than surpassed her dreams.
"Hello there, sister,"
he said with a sloppy smile as he crossed the room to give her a quick hug.
"You've got..."
He motioned to his shoulder. She looked down at her own shoulder, then smiled sheepishly as she saw the large dark grey smudge on the pale pink fabric of her dress.
"Charcoal," she explained ruefully. "I've been trying to teach Caroline to draw."
"You?" Colin asked doubtfully.
I know, she said. "She really couldn't have picked a worse tutor, but she only decided yesterday that she loves art, so I'm all she's got on such short notice."
"You should pack her off to see Benedict," Colin suggested. "I'm sure he'd be happy to give her a lesson or two."
The thought had already crossed my mind, but I'm sure she'll have moved on to some other pursuit by the time I can make the arrangements.
She motioned to a sofa.
"Sit. You look rather like a caged cat over there, pacing as you are."
He sat, even though he felt uncommonly fidgety.
"And before you ask," Daphne said, "I already told Jeffreys to see to food. Will sandwiches be enough?"
"Could you hear my stomach grumbling from across the room?"
"From across town, I'm afraid," she laughed. "Did you know that whenever it thunders, David says that it's your stomach?"
"Oh, good God," Colin muttered, but he was chuckling all the while.
His nephew was a rather clever little fellow. Daphne smiled broadly as she settled down against the sofa cushions, folding her hands elegantly in her lap.
"What brings you by, Colin? Not that you need a reason, of course. It's always lovely to see you."
He shrugged.
"Just passing by."
"Did you visit Anthony and Kate?" she asked.
Bridgerton House, where their eldest brother lived with his family, was just across the square from Hastings House.
"Benedict and Sophie are already there with the children, helping to prepare for your engagement ball tonight."
He shook his head.
"No, you're my chosen victim, I'm afraid."
She smiled again, but this time it was a softer expression, tempered by a fair dose of curiosity.
"Is something wrong?"
"No, of course not," he said quickly. "Why would you ask that?"
"I don't know." She cocked her head to the side. "You seem odd, that's all."
"Just tired."
She nodded knowingly.
"Wedding plans, I'm sure."
"Yes," he said, jumping on the excuse,
although for the life of him, he wasn't even sure what it was he was trying to hide from her.
"Well, remember that whatever you're going through..."
she said with a peevish twist to her lips. "It's a thousand times worse for Penelope. It's always worse for women, trust me."
"For weddings or for everything?"
he asked mildly. "Everything," she said promptly. "I know you men think you're actually in charge, but..."
"I wouldn't dream of thinking we're actually in charge," Colin said,
and not entirely sarcastically. Her face pinched into a peevish expression. "Women have far more to do than men, especially with weddings. With all the fittings I'm sure Penelope has had for her wedding gown, she probably feels like a pincushion."
"I suggested eloping," Colin said conversationally, "and I think she rather hoped I was serious."
Daphne chuckled. "I'm so glad you're marrying her, Colin." He nodded, not planning to say anything. And then, somehow, he was saying her name.
Yes?
He opened his mouth, and then...
"Never mind."
"Oh, no, you don't," she said. "Now you really have my curiosity piqued." He drummed his fingers against the sofa.
"Do you suppose the food might arrive soon?
Are you even hungry? Or are you merely trying to change the subject?"
"I'm always hungry."
She was silent for several seconds. "Colin," she finally asked, her voice soft and carefully gentle, "what were you going to say?"
He jumped to his feet, too restless to remain still, and began to pace.
He stopped, turned to her, looked at her concerned face.
"It's nothing,"
he started to say, except it wasn't nothing, and...
"How does one know?"
he blurted out, not even aware that he hadn't completed his question, until she replied, "How does one know what?" He stopped in front of the window. It looked like it might rain. He'd have to borrow a carriage from Daphne, unless he wanted to get soaked on the long walk home. Yet he didn't know why he was even thinking about precipitation, because what he really wanted to know was, "How does one know what, Colin?" Daphne repeated. He turned around and just let the words break free.
"How do you know if it's love?"
For a moment she just stared at him, her large brown eyes wide with surprise, her lips parted and utterly still.
"Forget I asked," he muttered.
"No," she exclaimed, jumping to her feet. "I'm glad you asked. Very glad. I'm just surprised, I must say." He closed his eyes, thoroughly disgusted with himself.
"I can't believe I just asked you that."
"No, Colin, don't be silly. It's really rather sweet that you asked. And I can't even begin to tell you how flattered I am that you would come to me when..."
"Daphne," he said warningly.
She had a way of wandering off the topic, and he really wasn't in the right frame of mind to follow her errant thoughts. Impulsively, she reached out and hugged him. Then, her hands still on his shoulders, she said, "I don't know."
"I beg your pardon?"
She gave her head a little shake. "I don't know how you know it's love. I think it's different for everyone."
"How did you know?"
She chewed on her lower lip for several seconds before replying, "I don't know."
"What?"
She shrugged helplessly. "I don't remember. It's been so long. I just knew."
"So what you're saying," he said, leaning against the windowsill and crossing his arms, "is that if one doesn't know one's in love, then one probably isn't."
"Yes," she said firmly. "No. No, that's not what I mean at all."
"Then what do you mean?"
"I don't know," she said weakly. He stared at her.
"And how long have you been married?" he muttered.
"Colin, don't tease. I'm trying to be helpful."
"And I appreciate the attempt. But truly, Daphne, you..."
I know, she interrupted. "I'm useless. But listen to me. Do you like Penelope?"
Then she gasped in horror.
"We are talking about Penelope, aren't we?"
"Of course we are," he snapped.
She let out a relieved sigh. "Good.
because if we weren't, then I can assure you I would have had no advice whatsoever.
I'll go, he said abruptly.
No, don't, she pleaded, placing her hand on his arm. Stay, Colin, please.
He looked at her, sighing, feeling defeated.
I feel like an ass.
Colin,
she said, guiding him to the sofa and pushing him down until he sat.
Listen to me. Love grows and changes every day, and it isn't like some thunderbolt from the sky, instantly transforming you into a different man. I know Benedict says it was that way for him, and that's just lovely. But you know, Benedict is not normal.
Colin very much wanted to take that bait, but he just couldn't summon the energy.
It wasn't like that for me, Daphne said, and I don't think it was like that for Simon, although, truthfully, I don't think I've ever asked.
You should.
She paused while her mouth was forming a word, leaving her looking like a surprised bird.
Why?
He shrugged.
So you can tell me.
What? Do you think it's different for men?
Everything else is.
She grimaced.
I'm beginning to develop a fair dose of pity for Penelope.
Oh, absolutely you should, he agreed. I'll make a dreadful husband, to be sure.
You will not, she said, patting his arm. Why on earth would you say that? You would never be unfaithful to her.
No, he agreed.
He was quiet for a moment, and when he finally spoke again, his voice was soft.
But I might not love her the way she deserves.
But you might.
She threw up her hands in a gesture of exasperation.
For heaven's sake, Colin, just the fact that you're sitting here asking your sister about love probably means you're more than halfway there.
Do you think?
If I didn't think so, she said, I wouldn't have said so.
She sighed.
Stop thinking so hard, Colin. You'll find marriage a lot easier if you simply allow it to be.
He eyed her suspiciously.
When did you grow so philosophical?
When you came by to see me and forced the issue, she said promptly. You're marrying the right person. Stop worrying so much.
I'm not worrying,
he said automatically. But of course, he was worrying. So he didn't even bother to defend himself when Daphne shot him an extremely sarcastic look. But it wasn't as if he were worrying whether Penelope was the right woman. He was certain of that. And he wasn't worried about whether his marriage would be a good one. He was certain of that as well. No, he was worrying about stupid things. About whether or not he loved her. Not because it would be the end of the world if he did, or the end of the world if he didn't, but because he found it extremely unsettling not to know exactly what it was he was feeling.
Colin?
He looked over at his sister, who was regarding him with a rather bemused expression. He stood, intending to leave before he embarrassed himself beyond repair, then leaned down and kissed her cheek.
Thank you, he said.
She narrowed her eyes.
I can't tell if you're serious or are teasing me for being an utter lack of help.
You were an utter lack of help, he said. But it's an honest thank you, nonetheless.
Points for effort?
Something like that.
Are you going over to Bridgerton House now? She asked.
Why? So I may embarrass myself with Anthony next?
Or Benedict, she said. He's there too.
The thing about large families was, there was never a lack of opportunity to make a fool of oneself with a sibling.
No,
he said with a small, wry smile.
I think I'll walk home.
Walk?
She echoed, gaping. He squinted toward the window.
Do you think it might rain?
Take my carriage, Colin, she insisted. And please wait for the sandwiches. There is sure to be a mountain of them. And if you leave before they arrive, I know I'll eat half, and then I'll hate myself for the rest of the day.
He nodded and sat back down, and was glad he did. He'd always been partial to smoked salmon. In fact, he took a plate with him in the carriage, staring out the window the whole way home, at the pouring rain. When the Bridgertons threw a party, they did it right. And when the Bridgertons threw an engagement ball, well, had Lady Whistledown still been writing, it would have taken at least 3 columns to chronicle the event. Even this engagement ball, thrown together at the last minute, due to the fact that neither Lady Bridgerton nor Mrs. Featherington were willing to allow their children the possibility of changing their minds during a long engagement, easily qualified as the party of the season. Although part of that, Penelope thought wryly, had little to do with the party itself, and everything to do with the continued speculation over why on earth Colin Bridgerton would choose a nobody like Penelope Featherington to be his wife. It hadn't even been this bad when Anthony Bridgerton had married Kate Sheffield, who, like Penelope, had never been considered a diamond of the first water. But at least Kate hadn't been old. Penelope couldn't even begin to count the number of times she'd heard the word spinster whispered behind her back during the past few days. But while the gossip was a bit tedious, it didn't really bother her, because she was still floating along on the cloud of her own bliss. A woman couldn't spend her entire adult life in love with one man and then not be almost stupid with happiness after he asked her to marry him. Even if she couldn't quite figure out how it had all happened. It had happened. That was all that mattered. And Colin was everything anyone could dream of in a fiancé. He stuck to her side like glue the entire evening, and Penelope didn't even think he was doing it to protect her from gossip. In all truth, he seemed rather oblivious to the talk. It was almost as if... Penelope smiled dreamily. It was almost as if Colin were remaining by her side because he wanted to be there.
"Did you see Cressida Tombley?"
Eloise whispered in her ear while Colin was off dancing with his mother.
"She's green with envy."
"That's just her dress," Penelope said, with an impressively straight face. Eloise laughed.
"Oh, I wish Lady Whistledown were writing. She would skewer her."
"I think Lady Whistledown is supposed to be her," Penelope said carefully.
"Oh, pish and tosh. I don't believe for one moment that Cressida is Lady Whistledown, and I can't believe that you do either."
"Probably not," Penelope allowed.
She knew that her secret would be better protected if she claimed to believe Cressida's story, but anyone who knew her would have found that so out of character that it would have been quite suspicious indeed.
"Cressida just wanted the money," Eloise continued disdainfully. "Or maybe the notoriety. Probably both."
Penelope watched her nemesis, holding court on the other side of the room. Her regular crowd of cronies milled about, but they were joined by new people as well, most likely curious about the Whistledown gossip.
"Well, she succeeded with the notoriety, at least."
Eloise nodded her agreement.
"I cannot even imagine why she was invited. There is certainly no love lost between the two of you, and none of us like her."
"Colin insisted upon it."
Eloise turned to her with gaping jaw.
"Why?"
Penelope suspected that the main reason was Cressida's recent claim to be Lady Whistledown. Most of the ton wasn't sure whether or not she was lying, but no one was willing to deny her an invitation to an event, just in case she really was telling the truth. And Colin and Penelope shouldn't have had any reason to know for certain otherwise. But Penelope couldn't reveal this to Eloise, so she told her the rest of the story, which was still the truth.
"Your mother didn't want to cause any gossip by cutting her, and Colin also said..."
She blushed. It was really too sweet.
"What?"
Eloise demanded. Penelope couldn't speak without smiling.
"He said he wanted Cressida to be forced to watch me in my triumph."
"Oh, my word!"
Eloise looked as if she might need to sit down.
"My brother is in love."
Penelope's blush turned a furious red.
"He is,"
Eloise exclaimed.
"He must be. Oh, you must tell me. Has he said so?"
There was something both wonderful and horrible in listening to Eloise gush. On the one hand, It was always lovely to share life's most perfect moments with one's best friend, and Eloise's joy and excitement were certainly contagious. But on the other hand, they weren't necessarily warranted, because Colin didn't love her, or at least he hadn't said so, but he acted like he did. Penelope clung to that thought, trying to focus on that rather than the fact that he'd never said the words. Actions spoke louder than words, didn't they? And his actions made her feel like a princess.
"Miss Featherington! Miss Featherington!"
Penelope looked to her left and beamed. That voice could belong to no one other than Lady Danbury.
"Miss Featherington!"
Lady Dee said, poking her cane through the crowd until she was standing right in front of Penelope and Eloise.
"Lady Danbury, how nice to see you."
Lady Danbury's wrinkled face became almost young again from the force of her smile.
"It's always nice to see me, regardless of what anyone else says. And you, you little devil, look what you did."
"Isn't it the best?"
Eloise asked. Penelope looked to her closest friend. For all her mixed emotions, Eloise was truly, honestly, and forever would be, thrilled for her. Suddenly it didn't matter that they were standing in the middle of a crowded ballroom, with everyone staring at her as if she was some sort of specimen on a biology plate. She turned and gave Eloise a fierce hug, whispering,
"I do love you,"
in her ear.
"I know you do,"
Eloise whispered back. Lady Danbury banged her cane loudly on the floor.
"I'm still standing here, ladies."
"Oh, sorry,"
Penelope said sheepishly.
"It's all right,"
Lady Dee said, with an uncharacteristic level of indulgence.
"It's rather nice to see two girls who'd rather embrace than stab each other in the back, if you must know."
"Thank you for coming over to congratulate me,"
Penelope said.
"I wouldn't have missed this for the world,"
Lady Danbury said.
"All these fools trying to figure out what you did to get him to marry you, when all you really did was be yourself."
Penelope's lips parted, and tears pricked her eyes.
"Why, Lady Danbury, that's just about the nicest—"
"No, no,"
Lady Danbury interrupted loudly.
"None of that. I haven't the time nor the inclination for sentiment."
But Penelope noticed that she'd pulled out her handkerchief and was discreetly dabbing her eyes.
"Ah, Lady Danbury,"
Colin said, returning to the group and sliding his arm possessively through Penelope's.
"Good to see you."
"Mr. Bridgerton," she said in curt greeting. "Just came over to congratulate your bride."
"Ah, but I am surely the one who deserves the congratulations."
"Truer words and all that,"
Lady Dee said.
"I think you might be right. She's more of a prize than anyone realizes."
"I realize," he said, his voice so low and deadly serious that Penelope thought she might faint from the thrill of it. "And if you'll excuse us,"
Colin continued smoothly, "I must take my fiancée over to meet my brother."
"I've met your brother,"
Penelope interrupted.
"Consider it tradition," he said. "We need to officially welcome you to the family."
"Oh."
She felt rather warm inside at the thought of becoming a Bridgerton.
"How lovely."
"As I was saying," Colin said, "Anthony would like to make a toast, and then I must lead Penelope in a waltz."
"Very romantic,"
Lady Danbury said approvingly.
"Yes, well, I am a romantic sort,"
Colin said airily. Eloise let out a loud snort. He turned to her with one arrogantly arched brow.
"I am."
"For Penelope's sake,"
she retorted.
"I certainly hope so."
"Are they always like this?"
Lady Danbury asked Penelope.
"Most of the time."
Lady Dee nodded.
"That's a good thing. My children rarely even speak to one another. Not out of any ill will, of course. They just have nothing in common. Sad, really."
Colin tightened his hand on Penelope's arm.
"We really must be going."
"Of course,"
she murmured, but as she turned to walk toward Antony, whom she could see across the room, standing near the small orchestra, she heard a loud and sudden commotion at the door.
"Attention! Attention!"
The blood drained from her face in under a second.
"Oh, no,"
she heard herself whisper. This wasn't supposed to happen. Not tonight, anyway.
"Attention!"
Monday, her mind screamed. She'd told her printer Monday, at the Mottram Ball.
"What is going on?"
Lady Danbury demanded. 10 young boys were racing into the room. Nothing more than urchins, really, holding sheaves of paper, tossing them about like large rectangles of confetti.
"Lady Whistledown's final column!"
they all yelled.
"Read it now! Read the truth!"
Chapter 17. Colin Bridgerton was famous for many things. He was famous for his good looks, which was no surprise. All the Bridgerton men were famous for their good looks. He was famous for his slightly crooked smile, which could melt a woman's heart across a crowded ballroom, and had even once caused a young lady to faint dead away, or at least to swoon delicately, then hit her head on a table, which did produce the aforementioned dead faint. He was famous for his mellow charm, his ability to set anyone at ease with a smooth grin and an amusing comment. What he was not famous for, and in fact what many people would have sworn he did not even possess, was a temper. And, in fact, due to his remarkable and heretofore untapped self-control, no one was going to get a glimpse of it that night either, although his soon-to-be wife might wake up the next day with a serious bruise on her arm.
"Colin!"
she gasped, looking down at where he was gripping her. But he couldn't let go. He knew he was hurting her. He knew it wasn't a terribly nice thing that he was hurting her, but he was so damned furious at that moment, and it was either squeeze her arm for all he was worth, or lose his temper in front of 500 of their nearest and dearest acquaintances. All in all, he thought he was making the right choice. He was going to kill her. As soon as he figured out some way to remove her from this godforsaken ballroom, he was absolutely going to kill her. They had agreed that Lady Whistledown was a thing of the past, that they were going to let matters lie. This was not supposed to happen. She was inviting disaster, ruin.
"This is fabulous!"
Eloise exclaimed, snatching a news sheet from the air.
"Absolutely, positively smashing! I'll bet she came out of retirement to celebrate your engagement."
"Wouldn't that be nice?" Colin drawled.
Penelope said nothing, but she looked very, very pale.
"Oh, my heavens!"
Colin turned to his sister, whose mouth was hanging open as she read the column.
"Grab one of those for me, Bridgerton,"
Lady Danbury ordered, swatting him in the leg with her cane.
"Can't believe she's publishing on a Saturday. Must be a good one."
Colin leaned down and picked up two pieces of paper from the floor, handing one to Lady Danbury and looking down at the one in his hand, even though he was fairly certain he knew exactly what it would say. He was right.
"There is nothing I despise more than a gentleman who thinks it amusing to give a lady a condescending pat on the hand as he murmurs, 'It is a woman's prerogative to change her mind.' And indeed, because I feel one should always support one's words with one's actions, I endeavour to keep my opinions and decisions steadfast and true. Which is why, gentle reader, when I wrote my column of the 19th of April, I truly intended it to be my last. However, events entirely beyond my control, or indeed my approval, force me to put my pen to paper one last time. Ladies and gentlemen, this author is not Lady Cressida Tumbly. She is nothing more than a scheming impostor, and it would break my heart to see my years of hard work attributed to one such as her." Lady Whistledown's Society Papers, 24th of April, 1824.
"This is the best thing I have ever seen,"
Eloise said in a gleeful whisper.
"Maybe I am a bad person at heart, because I have never before felt such happiness at another person's downfall."
"Balderdash," Lady Danbury said. "I know I am not a bad person, and I find this delightful."
Colin said nothing. He didn't trust his voice. He didn't trust himself.
"Where is Cressida?"
Eloise asked, craning her neck.
"Does anyone see her? I'll bet she's already fled. She must be mortified. I would be mortified if I were her."
"You would never be her," Lady Danbury said. "You're much too decent a person."
Penelope said nothing.
"Still," Eloise continued jovially, "one almost feels sorry for her."
"But only almost," Lady Dee said.
"Oh, for certain. Barely almost, truth be told."
Colin just stood there, grinding his teeth into powder.
"And I get to keep my £1,000, cackled Lady Danbury.
"Penelope!"
Eloise exclaimed, jostling her with her elbow.
"You haven't said a word. Isn't this marvellous?"
Penelope nodded and said,
"I can't believe it."
Colin's grip on her arm tightened.
"Your brother's coming,"
she whispered. He looked to his right. Anthony was striding toward him, Violet and Kate hot on his heels.
"Well, this rather upstages us," Anthony said, as he drew up alongside Colin.
He nodded at the ladies present.
"Eloise, Penelope, Lady Danbury."
"I don't think anyone is going to listen to Anthony's toast now," Violet said, glancing about the room.
The buzz of activity was relentless. Errant news sheets still floated in the air, and all about them people were slipping on the ones that had already landed on the floor. The hum of the whispers was constant and almost grating, and Colin felt like the top of his skull was going to blow off. He had to get away, now, or at least as soon as possible. His head was screaming, and he felt too hot in his own skin. It was almost like passion, except this wasn't passion. It was fury, and it was outrage, and it was this awful, black feeling that he'd been betrayed by the one person who should have stood by him without question. It was strange. He knew that Penelope was the one with the secret, the one with the most to lose. This was about her, not him. He knew that, intellectually at least. But somehow that had ceased to matter. They were a team now, and she had acted without him. She had no right to put herself in such a precarious position without consulting him first. He was her husband, or would be, and it was his God-given duty to protect her whether she desired it or not.
"Colin," his mother was saying, "are you well? You look a bit odd."
"Make the toast," he said, turning to Anthony. "Penelope isn't feeling well, and I need to take her home."
"You're not feeling well?" Eloise asked Penelope. "What's wrong? You didn't say anything."
To Penelope's credit, she managed a rather credible...
"A bit of a headache, I'm afraid." "Yes, yes, Anthony," Violet said. "Do go ahead and make the toast now, so that Colin and Penelope may have their dance. She really can't leave until you do."
Anthony nodded his agreement, then motioned for Colin and Penelope to follow him to the front of the ballroom. A trumpeter let out a loud squawk on his horn, signalling the partygoers to be quiet. They all obeyed, probably because they assumed the ensuing announcement would be about Lady Whistledown.
"Ladies and gentlemen,"
Anthony said loudly, accepting a flute of champagne from a footman,
"I know that you are all intrigued by Lady Whistledown's recent intrusion into our party, but I must entreat you all to remember our purpose for gathering here tonight."
It should have been a perfect moment, Colin thought dispassionately. It was to have been Penelope's night of triumph, her night to shine, to show the world how beautiful and lovely and smart she really was. It was his night to make his intentions well and truly public, to make sure that everyone knew that he had chosen her, and, just as importantly, that she had chosen him. And all he wanted to do was take her by the shoulders and shake her until he ran out of strength. She was jeopardizing everything. She was putting her very future at risk.
"As the head of the Bridgerton family," Anthony continued, "it gives me great joy whenever one of my siblings chooses a bride. Or groom," he added with a smile, nodding toward Daphne and Simon.
Colin looked down at Penelope. She was standing very straight and very still in her dress of ice-blue satin. She wasn't smiling, which must have looked odd to the hundreds of people staring at her. But maybe they would just think she was nervous. There were hundreds of people staring at her, after all. Anyone would be nervous. Although if one was standing right next to her, as Colin was, one could see the panic in her eyes, the rapid rise and fall of her chest as her breathing grew faster and more erratic. She was scared. Good. She should be scared. Scared of what could happen to her if her secret came out. Scared of what would happen to her once they had a chance to talk.
"Therefore," Anthony concluded, "it gives me great pleasure to lift my glass in a toast to my brother Colin and his soon-to-be bride, Penelope Featherington. To Colin and Penelope."
Colin looked down at his hand and realized that someone had placed a glass of champagne in it. He lifted his glass, started to raise it to his lips, then thought the better of it, and touched it to Penelope's mouth instead. The crowd cheered wildly, and he watched as she took a sip, and then another, and another, forced to keep drinking until he removed the glass, which he did not do until she was finished. Then he realized that his childish display of power had left him without a drink, which he badly needed. So he plucked Penelope's glass from her hand and downed it in a single gulp. The crowd cheered even harder. He leaned down and whispered in her ear, "We're going to dance now. We're going to dance until the rest of the party joins us and we're no longer the center of attention. And then you and I will slip outside. And then we will talk." Her chin moved in a barely perceptible nod. He took her hand and led her onto the dance floor, placing his other hand at her waist as the orchestra began the first strains of a waltz.
"Colin," she whispered, "I didn't mean for this to happen."
He affixed a smile on his face. This was supposed to be his first official dance with his intended, after all.
"Not now," he ordered.
"But in 10 minutes
I will have a great deal to say to you. But for right now we are simply going to dance."
"I just wanted to say..."
His hand tightened around hers in a gesture of unmistakable warning. She pursed her lips and looked at his face for the briefest of moments, then looked away.
"I should be smiling,"
she whispered, still not looking at him.
"Then smile."
"You should be smiling."
"You're right," he said. "I should."
But he didn't. Penelope felt like frowning. She felt like crying, in all honesty. But somehow she managed to nudge her lips up at the corners. The entire world was watching her. Her entire world, at least. And she knew they were examining her every move, cataloguing each expression that crossed her face. Years she'd spent feeling like she was invisible and hating it. And now she'd have given anything for a few brief moments of anonymity again. No, not anything. She wouldn't have given up Colin. If having him meant that she would spend the rest of her life under close scrutiny from the Ton, it would be worth it. And if having to endure his anger and disdain at a time like this was to be a part of marriage as well, then that would be worth it too. She'd known that he would be furious with her for publishing one last column. Her hands had been shaking as she'd rewritten the words, and she'd been terrified the entire time she'd been at St. Bride's Church, as well as the ride to and from, sure that he was going to jump out at her at any moment, calling off the wedding because he couldn't bear to be married to Lady Whistledown. but she'd done it anyway. She knew, he thought, she was making a mistake, but she simply could not allow Cressida Tombley to take the credit for her life's work. But was it so much to ask that Colin at least make the attempt to see it all from her point of view? It would have been hard enough allowing anyone to pretend to be Lady Whistledown, but Cressida was unbearable. Penelope had worked too hard and endured too much at Cressida's hands. Plus, she knew that Colin would never jilt her once their engagement became public. That was part of the reason she'd specifically instructed her publisher to have the papers delivered on Monday to the Mottram ball. Well, that, and the fact that it seemed terribly wrong to do it at her own engagement ball, especially when Colin was so opposed to the idea. Damn Mr. Lacey! He'd surely done this to maximize circulation and exposure. He knew enough about society, from reading Whistledown, to know that a Bridgerton engagement ball would be the most coveted invitation of the season. Why this should matter, she didn't know, since increasing interest in Whistledown would not lead to more money in his pocket. Whistledown was well and truly through, and neither Penelope nor Mr. Lacey would receive another pound from its publication. Unless... Penelope frowned and sighed. Mr. Lacey must be hoping that she would change her mind. Colin's hand tightened at her waist, and she looked back up. His eyes were on hers, startlingly green, even in the candlelight. Or maybe it was just that she knew they were so green. She probably would have thought them emerald in the dark. He nodded toward the other dancers on the floor, which was now crowded with revellers. "Time to make our escape," he said. She returned his nod with one of her own. They had already told his family that she wasn't feeling well and wanted to go home, so no one would think over much of their departure. And if it wasn't quite de rigueur for them to be alone in his carriage, well, sometimes rules were stretched for affianced couples, especially on such romantic evenings. A bubble of ridiculous, panicky laughter escaped her lips. The night was turning out to be the least romantic of her life. Colin looked at her sharply, one arrogant brow raised in question. "It's nothing," Penelope said. He squeezed her hand, although not terribly affectionately. "I want to know," he said. She shrugged fatalistically. She couldn't imagine what she could do or say to make the night any worse than it already was.
"I was just thinking about how this evening was supposed to be romantic."
"It could have been," he said cruelly. His hand slipped from its position at her waist, but he held on to her other hand, grasping her fingers lightly to weave her through the crowd until they stepped through the French doors out onto the terrace.
"Not here,"
Penelope whispered, glancing anxiously back toward the ballroom. He didn't even dignify her comment with a reply. Instead, pulling her farther into the inky night, drifting around a corner until they were quite alone. But they didn't stop there. With a quick glance to make sure that no one was about, Colin pushed open a small, unobtrusive side door.
"What's this?" Penelope asked.
His answer was a little shove at the small of her back, until she was fully inside the dark hallway. "Up," he said, motioning to the steps. Penelope didn't know whether to be scared or thrilled, but she climbed the stairs anyway, ever aware of Colin's hot presence right at her back. After they'd climbed several flights, Colin stepped ahead of her and pushed open a door, peeking out into the hall. It was empty, so he stepped out, pulling her along with him, dashing quietly through the hall, which Penelope now recognized as the family's private chambers, until they reached a room she had never before entered. Colin's room. She'd always known where it was. Through all her years of coming here to visit with Eloise, she'd never once done more than trail her fingers along the heavy wood of the door. It had been years since he'd lived here at number 5 on a permanent basis, but his mother had insisted upon maintaining his room for him.
One never knew when he might need it, she'd said. And she'd been proven right earlier that season, when Colin had returned from Cyprus without a house under lease. He pushed open the door and pulled her inside after him. But the room was dark, and she was stumbling. And when she stopped moving, it was because his body was right there in front of hers. He touched her arms to steady her, but then he didn't let go, just held her there in the dark. It wasn't an embrace, not really, but the length of her body was touching the length of his. She couldn't see anything, but she could feel him, and she could smell him, and she could hear his breathing, swirling through the night air, gently caressing her cheek. It was agony. It was ecstasy. His hands slid slowly down her bare arms, torturing her every nerve. And then, abruptly, he stepped away, followed by silence. Penelope wasn't sure what she had expected. He would yell at her. He would berate her. He would order her to explain herself. But he was doing none of those things. He was just standing there in the dark, forcing the issue, forcing her to say something.
Could you light a candle? She finally asked.
You don't like the dark, he drawled.
Not now. Not like this.
I see, he murmured. So you're saying you might like it like this? His fingers were suddenly on her skin, trailing along the edge of her bodice. And then they were gone.
Don't, she said, her voice shaking.
Don't touch you. His voice grew mocking, and Penelope was glad that she couldn't see his face. But you're mine, aren't you?
Not yet, she warned him.
Oh, but you are. You saw to that. It was rather clever timing, actually, waiting until our engagement ball to make your final announcement. You knew I didn't want you to publish that last column. I forbade it. We agreed.
We never agreed.
He ignored her outburst. You waited until... We never agreed! Penelope cried out again, needing to make it clear that she had not broken her word. Whatever else she had done, she had not lied to him. Well, aside from keeping Whistledown a secret for nearly a dozen years, but he certainly hadn't been alone in that deception.
And yes, she admitted, because it didn't seem right to start lying now. I knew you wouldn't jilt me. But I hoped.
Her voice broke, and she was unable to finish. You hoped what? Colin asked, after an interminable silence.
I hoped that you would forgive me, she whispered, or at least that you would understand. I always thought you were the sort of man who...
What sort of man? He asked, this time after the barest hint of a pause.
It's my fault, really, she said, sounding tired and sad. I've put you on a pedestal. You've been so nice all these years. I suppose I thought you were incapable of anything else.
What the hell have I done that hasn't been nice? He demanded. I've protected you. I've offered for you. I've...
You haven't tried to see this from my point of view, she interrupted.
Because you're acting like an idiot, he nearly roared. There was silence after that, the kind of silence that grates at ears, gnaws at souls.
I can't imagine what else there is to say, Penelope finally said.
Colin looked away. He didn't know why he did so. It wasn't as if he could see her in the dark anyway. But there was something about the tone of her voice that made him uneasy. She sounded vulnerable, tired, wishful and heartbroken. She made him want to understand her, or at least to try, even though he knew she had made a terrible mistake. Every little catch in her voice put a damper on his fury. He was still angry, but somehow he'd lost the will to display it. You are going to be found out, you know, he said, his voice low and controlled. You have humiliated Cressida. She will be beyond furious, and she's not going to rest until she unearths the real Lady Whistledown. Penelope moved away.
He could hear her skirts rustling.
"Cressida isn't bright enough to figure me out. And besides, I'm not going to write any more columns, so there will be no opportunity for me to slip up and reveal something."
There was a beat of silence, and then she added,
"You have my promise on that."
"It's too late," he said.
"It's not too late," she protested. "No one knows. No one knows but you. And you're so ashamed of me, I can't bear it."
"Oh, for the love of God, Penelope," he snapped. "I'm not ashamed of you."
"Would you please light a candle?" she wailed.
Colin crossed the room and fumbled in a drawer for a candle and the means with which to light it. "I'm not ashamed of you," he reiterated, "but I do think you're acting foolishly."
"You may be correct," she said, "but I have to do what I think is right."
"You're not thinking," he said dismissively, turning and looking at her face as he sparked a flame. "Forget, if you will, although I cannot, what will happen to your reputation if people find out who you really are. Forget that people will cut you, that they will talk about you behind your back."
"Those people aren't worth worrying about," she said, her back ramrod straight.
"Perhaps not," he agreed, crossing his arms and staring at her, hard. "But it will hurt. You will not like it, Penelope. And I won't like it." She swallowed convulsively. Good. Maybe he was getting through to her. "But forget all of that," he continued. "You have spent the last decade insulting people, offending them."
"I have said lots of very nice things as well," she protested,
her dark eyes glistening with unshed tears. "Of course you have. But those aren't the people you are going to have to worry about. I'm talking about the angry ones, the insulted ones." He strode forward and grabbed her by her upper arms. "Penelope," he said urgently, "there will be people who want to hurt you." His words had been meant for her, but they turned around and pierced his own heart. He tried to picture a life without Penelope. It was impossible. Just weeks ago she'd been... He stopped, thought. What had she been? A friend? An acquaintance? Someone he saw and never really noticed. And now she was his fiancée, soon to be his bride. And maybe she was something more than that. Something deeper. Something even more precious. "What I want to know," he asked, deliberately forcing the conversation back on topic, so his mind wouldn't wander down such dangerous roads, "is why you're not jumping on the perfect alibi if the point is to remain anonymous."
"Because remaining anonymous isn't the point,"
she fairly yelled. "You want to be found out?" he asked, gaping at her in the candlelight.
"No, of course not," she replied. "But this is my work. This is my life's work. This is all I have to show for my life. And if I can't take the credit for it, I'll be damned if someone else will."
Colin opened his mouth to offer a retort, but to his surprise, he had nothing to say. Life's work. Penelope had a life's work. He did not. She might not be able to put her name on her work, but when she was alone in her room, she could look at her back issues and point to them and say to herself, "This is it. This is what my life has been about."
"Colin," she whispered, clearly startled by his silence. She was amazing. He didn't know how he hadn't realized it before, when he'd already known that she was smart and lovely and witty and resourceful. But all those adjectives, and a whole host more he hadn't yet thought of, did not add up to the true measure of her. She was amazing. And he was, dear God above, he was jealous of her.
"I'll go," she said softly, turning and walking toward the door. For a moment he didn't react. His mind was still frozen, reeling with revelations. But when he saw her hand on the doorknob, he knew he could not let her go. Not this night. Not ever. "No," he said hoarsely, closing the distance between them in three long strides. No, he said again. I want you to stay. She looked up at him, her eyes two pools of confusion.
But you said...
He cupped her face tenderly with his hands. Forget what I said. And that was when he realized that Daphne had been right. His love hadn't been a thunderbolt from the sky. It had started with a smile, a word, a teasing glance. Every second he had spent in her presence it had grown, until he'd reached this moment, and he suddenly knew. He loved her. He was still furious with her for publishing that last column, and he was bloody ashamed of himself that he was actually jealous of her for having found a life's work and purpose. But even with all that, he loved her. And if he let her walk out the door right now, he would never forgive himself. Maybe this, then, was the definition of love. When you wanted someone, needed her, adored her still, even when you were utterly furious and quite ready to tie her to the bed just to keep her from going out and making more trouble. This was the night. This was the moment. He was brimming with emotion, and he had to tell her. He had to show her. Stay, he whispered, and he pulled her to him, roughly, hungrily, without apology or explanation. Stay, he said again, leading her to his bed. And when she didn't say anything, he said it for a third time. Stay. She nodded. He took her into his arms. This was Penelope, and this was love. Chapter 18. The moment Penelope nodded, the moment before she nodded really, she knew that she had agreed to more than a kiss. She wasn't sure what had made Colin change his mind, why he had been so angry one minute, and then so loving and tender the next. She wasn't sure, but the truth was, she didn't care. One thing she knew, he wasn't doing this, kissing her so sweetly to punish her. Some men might use desire as a weapon, temptation as revenge, but Colin wasn't one of them. It just wasn't in him. He was, for all his rakish and mischievous ways, for all his jokes and teasing and sly humour, a good and noble man, and he would be a good and noble husband. She knew this as well as she knew herself. And if he was kissing her passionately, lowering her to his bed, covering her body with his own, then it was because he wanted her, cared enough to overcome his anger, cared for her. Penelope kissed him back with every ounce of her emotion, every last corner of her soul. She had years and years of love for this man, and what she lacked in technique, she made up in fervour. She clutched at his hair, writhed beneath him, unmindful of her own appearance. They weren't in a carriage, or his mother's drawing room this time. There was no fear of discovery, no need to make sure that she looked presentable in 10 minutes. This was the night she could show him everything she felt for him. She would answer his desire with her own, and silently make her vows of love and fidelity and devotion. When the night was through, he would know that she loved him. She might not say the words, she might not even whisper them, but he would know. Or maybe he already knew. It was funny. It had been so easy to hide her secret life as Lady Whistledown, but so unbelievably hard to keep her heart from her eyes every time she looked at him. When did I start needing you so much? He whispered, raising his head very slightly from hers, until the tips of their noses touched, and she could see his eyes, dark and colourless in the dim candlelight, but so very green in her mind, focusing on hers. His breath was hot, and his gaze was hot, and he was making her feel hot in areas of her body she never even allowed herself to think about. His fingers moved to the back of her gown, moving expertly along the buttons, until she felt the fabric loosening, first around her breasts, then around her ribs, then around her waist. And then it wasn't even